The Agile Toolkit. Hello, this is your host, Bob Payne. I'm here with Ward Cunningham and Rick McGridge. And I really wanted to talk to you about your latest book, about fit, and I know it is sold out here at the Agile conference a couple of times. They keep ordering in more, so I know it's very popular here. So I just wanted to hear about how the book came about and some of the high points of it.
So fit was developed by Ward and was released in 2002, and I'd been working on testing frameworks and was aware of the issues around testing. And when I saw Ward's fit system, I realized it was a beautiful, elegant, and powerful system that dealt with all of the issues that I was aware of. And so I switched over to using it and started doing things with it and communicated with Ward about the things that I was doing. And then the next year in 2003, we were at the same conference and we were chatting about fit, and I asked Ward whether someone was writing a book about this because it seemed to be something that the world needed. And so we started talking about a book, and 2 years later, the book is here.
It takes a while to produce a book. There's actually a deep history behind fit that I had done things like that on projects and had seen it work in practice, but never in a general way that could go other places. You know, that I always made a custom testing framework for every application. And I finally decided that it was time, maybe a little bit because other people were getting close, it was time to put together the package, and I was thrilled to have Rick's early participation in that. But I knew that while it's not easy to give software away, you know, you have to go out and campaign for its use if you're going to have any impact. And I was thrilled to have Rick's assistance in that campaign. This is, in a sense, the culmination of the campaign here this week with the, this is the first availability of the book, really. Right. It's only been out for a week or two. So you got us at a good time. We're feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very satisfying seeing the response that that we're getting at the conference today, the last few days.
And I've been particularly pleased with the number of languages that are now hooked into the Fit server and
Oh yeah, Fit is a lot like the unit testing that's for a long time been a part of Agile methods, extreme programming, except that the constants that you might put into the a unit test get pulled out and put into tables, and those tables are put into documents, and those documents don't say anything about the technology that you're programming in. It says facts about the business, in a sense, and that I think is something that sets this apart from a lot of other testing frameworks, is that there's a hope that once that beautiful new program becomes its own, you know, legacy albatross, that you might find those fit tests are actually your escape hatch to the next technology.
Right.
And so I can't say that we've actually seen that done yet, but we're very interested in making sure that is the case. And part of that is making sure that it's well supported in a lot of languages.
But certainly true that, like JUnit has grown, while SUnit originally from Smalltalk has been taken by others and implemented in other languages. And so unit testing has been supported in a wide range of languages. And likewise with FIT, there have been a whole range of people who've gathered together and have ported FIT onto different languages. And there's a large number of that. And there's a lot of energy and ideas brought by those people in terms of making FIT available.
Yeah, I actually heard, I was talking with someone last night who's having sort of an issue testing a legacy piece of Fortran. And there was some talk at the table about possibly, you know, building a fixture to be able to drive that from FIT. And I mean, to a certain extent, you know, if you're talking about these sort of matrix calculations, that's perfect for a table.
Oh, absolutely.
Inputs and outputs.
If they're listening now, I'd be glad to help.
I can point you in their direction, certainly. So what were the challenges that you got, you had in writing the book? Was it difficult to get the time together? I know that's always a tough one for most authors.
Not really. We found points in the development where we could have lots of discussions about how we saw it. We found in those early days part of what was happening is that we were finding out how much we shared a point of view, and that it came out that I think we did, that we found, I personally found that your focus, your point of view, the way you saw things, Ward, was very consistent with mine. And so it was very easy to kind of move forward then to start discussing, well, what is this book about? Who are we writing it for? What are the main elements of it? And so we independently thought about, well, what is going to be in the book? What is the table of contents? And then we discussed that. And we, of course, the book changed. It was refactored. It had input from reviewers. The structure moved quite a lot over that time. But I found it a good collaboration. And mm-hmm. It was, to me, it was rewarding and easy.
When we said we had long talks about this, this was between hemispheres, Rick's a New Zealander and I'm an Oregonian, but we would find a time of day where we could get on there and do online chats, mm-hmm. and that was, although it's not ideal, it was a way where we could probe what might feel like challenging each other on attitude. Do you think this? Are you trying to do mm-hmm. this? What would this look like? And that was really, I think, a matter of trust building, in both of our parts, that we wanted to get involved, in a project that would last this long, and whatever it is, it was going to be the FIT book. And so, we wanted it to be right. By the way, every indication is it's spot on. Probably the biggest challenge we faced in even arranging a table of contents is how do we address the reader? Because FIT's meant to be a vehicle for a development group to communicate with a customer group or the problem owner, the business analyst. Are we writing to the business analyst or are we writing to the developer? Right. And that's something that has always been a strong organizing influence on the book, mm-hmm. is who we're speaking to at any given moment.
Have you gotten feedback from some of the business analysts or customers that may have used the book? I've certainly heard good things from developers. And IT teams that have looked at the book.
Well, it's very early days, but certainly I've spoken to a few people who saw drafts of the book and who were able to start using it and talking to customers and moving forward. So the indication is that there's good reaction, but we're still to see.
Right.
We'll be able to answer that question rather better in another few months, I would hope.
Say a few words about how it actually came out. What did it feel like? Because, we did a round of reviewing and then Rick did the really hard work of reshaping the book. That was a strong reviewer comment. Was that easy or was that hard?
I think once the suggestion came that it would be useful to focus on the business point of view, how are the tables used to write executable requirements and make a separation between that and how programmers make a connection between the tables and into the system under test. Obviously, the programmers need to read both. Turning it into two parts made a lot of clarity, and it also meant that non-technical people could read the first half of the book to understand how tables are used. And that then raised lots of issues that were kind of hidden when that separation wasn't made. So that was an interesting refactoring in the book at that process. One thing that helped support that is that made use of a building system so that the book was in part built out of examples and out of code. And that made it very easy to start moving things around and to make changes to it. As it happens, that build, I set up the build to be defined in terms of fit tables. So these fit tables weren't tests. They were a description of how the build should work for the book. So that process, just like when software, was an important step in terms of enabling refactoring.
Wow.
And avoiding us having a legacy book.
So you've sort of you've mentioned refactoring and now a little bit of test-driven book writing, or at least supporting with fit.
Let alone pairing.
Yeah, and you mentioned the sort of a lot of distributed teams use online chat systems or instant messaging or wikis to communicate. And that sounds like that's something that you did also. What other sort of traditionally agile practices did you bring into the writing process?
Communicate. We never talked in terms of trying to gather stories from our customers, but I suppose that's what drove our thinking about what is the way and what are the issues that the book needs to address. So we didn't really push that one. I had several people who asked me, "Well, did you write tests before you wrote this book?" Maybe next time.
Well, there was Rick was already very sophisticated in making a use of every way that fit can be extended, and one thing that I didn't want forgotten is that it had to speak clearly to people who were just starting, people
right.
who were maybe new to Agile, people who were new to acceptance testing, people who might be in a dysfunctional organization. And it was in that sense, I think, that we came up with the idea of telling a story that you might recognize yourself in and getting more of the idea of how it worked and less about, I mean, how using it worked as mm-hmm. opposed to how the program worked. And I know that, Rick is very proud of the stuff, the machinery he's added, but that super simple, mm-hmm. I think, is really one of the strengths. The book does not lose you. You know, you can start there no matter where you are. It has a very easy entry, but it takes you to the limit too. There's it shows what can be done with a simple framework to do very powerful things.
Mm-hmm. So I think that it was important to put it in a context of people working together and communicating.
Right,
and so it was important to show the way in which people may begin to start to use the ideas, to collaborate, to start thinking about how do we use this to be clearer about our stories? What is the balance between being clear about the requirements? How does that fit in with testing issues? And then the whole question of how people work and how how the tests evolve over time naturally right. through the Agile process, and how do people work together to make that evolution happen in a useful way, so that throughout this, the story tests are a really significant resource for the business and say a lot about the business and what the system will do. So they're up to date. They say a lot about what the system is. And as Ward mentioned before, if in fact in time that system is going to be replaced, then the story tests act as a very powerful business-oriented description of what that does.
Mm-hmm. And I think sort of interestingly, you made a point that this might be very useful in teams that are not necessarily agile. I mean, certainly as a tool, it is, I think, broadly applicable to many types of organizations.
We think so.
Yeah.
It was certainly inspired by the agile practices, but I think as with many things, those practices can have value on their own, and certainly testing is one of them. Mm-hmm.
Because we've always talked about customer acceptance tests, and that's always been a very difficult practice to implement in a truly meaningful way, especially having the customers write the tests. Quite often they'll come in with a scenario or criteria for completion, and then the development group automates that. But I think this allows a nice synergy between the two groups, building the underlying framework and the fixtures to tie into your back-end code, but then also really allowing the, nice wiki interface for the customers to develop and change the values that they're exercising the system with.
Yes. Well, going to your point about non-agile, the example that we chose actually starts with an organization that is not agile.
Yeah.
And is having difficulties with their process. And it shows how FIT can be used in that situation. As it happens, surprisingly, given our background, the business actually is in the process of moving to become agile during the time of the story of this company, this fictitious company.
Right.
The other point, perhaps just to mention, is that yes, there are a number of ways in which FIT can be used, and Ward's original FIT system was set up to be used from HTML and with a wiki.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Martin and Micah Martin and others have taken FIT and provide other ways of editing tables and of providing a framework which runs FIT as an essential core, and fitness has an important contribution to making FIT available to projects where a wiki interface is an appropriate one.
Right. What's the most innovative use of FIT that you guys have seen to date? I'm sure there are a lot of sort of interesting ones out there, but if you had to pick one.
Well, I would say something that surprised me is people who've done unusual things with putting tables inside the cells of a FIT table. And I can think of two. One was Bjorn Freeman Benson introduced FIT on the Urban Sim project. And this was a large urban scale simulation that might be used for urban planning, and they dealt with lots of complicated data records, and where I would put a number or a string in a cell,
mm-hmm.
He wanted to have a given in a cell which was 6 database records,
right?
So he just put a table inside the cell, and of course HTML has nested tables, and that mm-hmm. just looked just fine, and I had no expectation that somebody would do something that structured.
Yeah, that might work for the Fortran implementation.
Yeah, right. he did mention that he had to kind of work on the parser a little bit to make sure that worked, you know.
Right.
But he said, well, of course, I'm a programmer. Why wouldn't I work on the parser? the other I'm thinking of is I know Brian Merrick has experimented a little bit, and I think that was using do fixture, where he said, let me make the cell big enough that it's the whole page, and then he would put stuff inside of it. I'm actually kind of forgetting how that worked, but it had an effect of completely changing the way the test looked, and it was important to him from a storytelling point of view of the test. Do you remember exactly what he did?
In the FIT library, I added support for HTML lists as embedded tables and set that up so it was relatively straightforward to be able to handle other sorts of data as well as graphical data. And so I was inspired by the first use of that. And so Brian had played around with how he could use those in various circumstances. As it happens, once we had embedded tables, then it was relatively straightforward to use that as a mechanism to write story tests in FIT to test itself. And that's an important part of any tool, of course,
right.
Is that we have a comprehensive set of acceptance tests for it. And so that is part of a way in which we can think about what is the next version of the FIT system,
right.
What is it that is in common between all of the different languages, and we have a way of specifying the framework from the point of view from the outside. So that's I think is a useful way for us to be able to discuss what the meaning is and what is in FIT and what we would like to be in FIT into the future.
Now if the listeners are thinking, what in the world are they talking about? I will say that you did ask us what was the most out there thing that impressed us. And you know, I think that, you know, surprising versatility is it. But that doesn't mean that I'm not impressed with the team that uses it in a very straightforward way, and their tables look like they're right out of Excel and they're just full of numbers.
Right.
But the numbers mean something to them and they're getting them checked. You know, so the best thing is to see a team where this just becomes a part of their practice and they don't even think about it. They just do it and it makes their life better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real dream, that it just causes conversations to be shorter, causes confusion to be less, causes you know, the product to come out better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what more could you want?
Yes, because there's certainly many, many organizations now who are using FIT and enjoying the value, the results that they get from that. And as with moving into test-driven development at a program level, that moving into using FIT to drive the development of a system changes the mindset and is very powerful.
Well, I think another interesting thing that, and I want to get back to the fact that you mentioned that you're now testing FIT with FIT, that probably really helps implementations that are doing other language implementations. Because now you don't. I'm assuming there were unit tests for the original FIT, but now if you get your fixtures right, you can run FIT in FIT. You know, run the tables and see that you've gotten your implementation, your language.
There is kind of a funny story there, but first let me say yes, it's certainly true that. In terms of charting the evolution of FIT going forward, we will definitely make it based on, you know, concrete tests. We'll negotiate, you know, what the test should be, and then we'll all agree to match those tests. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I think we're going to do. We're still forming the community. But early on, I had just written this thing, and of course, to kind of keep things straight, I did it test first. And I was writing unit tests as I wrote the code, and I wrote the unit tests so that it was clear what order I wrote them. And so when anybody did an implementation, they would just port a test to their language and then satisfy it, port the next test and satisfy it. And that worked very well, except that because what I was writing was itself a testing framework, once it started working, I felt the same effect that I was getting with unit testing by simply writing a fit test that wouldn't work. And the fit framework was already robust enough that it would catch any exceptions and tell you what was going on, and it would do it in these nice HTML tables. And I started using fit to bring up fit.
Yeah.
And that made a lot of sense to me. But what I hadn't thought about was those other developers, because everybody who tried to implement fit in another language just got in this habit of translating a test, pass it, translating a test, pass it, and about halfway through their development,
they ran out of tests.
They ran out of tests. And I couldn't have figured this out, you know?
Yeah.
But it was, you know, every single one had a problem. So, oh, well, now I've gotten to here, you know, what do I do next? That's not done. And the best advice I had then was, well, here's the examples in the order that I developed them. Why don't you see if you can make these examples work? But that was not near the guidance. You know, that was, and what this illustrates is what I had failed to do is really communicate as from myself as a developer to them as a developer, you know, how did the development go?
Right.
What I did have is I had tests. I said, well, when you run fit, these tests should pass, which is talking about what fit is, but it didn't say, you know, how to
get there.
Right. Now, of course, they're all good guys, and they all struggled through there and figured out something, you know, and the trouble was they were doing an implementation to kind of see what fit was.
Right.
But, it, you know, I learned a lesson, you know, in unit testing. You know, it shows you can always learn something, I guess.
And when I started using fit, I started exploring new types of fixtures. And so I found it very useful at a certain point to be able to test drive those fixtures with fit. And so in parallel with Ward, I was also trying ways of specifying tests for fit itself. So I think there's still I think we're still finding what is the best way of specifying them so they're very precise and easy to read. And I think that's a valuable thing. I suppose many computer people like the idea of eating their own dog food, that if you use your tools on themselves, then you gain things from doing that.
What are some of the languages that you've currently seen fit ported to? I certainly know of PyFit.
Yeah, Python. Yeah, a lot of activity there. Yeah. And John Roth. The big ones where it's a real natural and is a perfect fit is C#, which Jim Shore and I did, and the original Java. I think that I'd like to see it in all the popular scripting languages. I know that the Python is well developed, but we also had a Perl version and a Ruby version. Smalltalk, done in several dialects of Smalltalk. That's stroking my old passion.
Sure.
We have two versions of Lisp. That,
oh, you do? Yeah. Okay, I was actually going to ask about that.
Did that with Ken Dickey in both Scheme and Common Lisp.
Okay.
And it turns out that my original implementation, you know, made a lot of use of the type system in Java to kind of key off of for automatic type conversion. It gave us a chance, Ken and I, working through the Lisp version to really think through what it would mean to do it in an untyped language, because well, in common with us, when Bo Scheme, I guess you have as much type as you want.
You know, it can be or as little. Or,
right. And finding that right was a little touchy. So that, you know, I said, well, this has got to be easy for those guys who don't have types. But then it did raise some questions. And I think, especially in the scripting languages, it's most people look at them and they say, well, these implementations look a little too much like Java to really be good scripting implementations. And I think that that will relax over time.
I think there'll be some refactoring.
Right. The one thing we hope is that from the technology independent view of the customer, of the business analyst, you know, that their view won't change. It's really the people who are supporting them by doing the implementations. What implementations am I forgetting?
C++.
We've had several.
I heard about the Objective-C.
That's right. Yeah, and several for C++, and the most recent one I think makes, you know, clever use of macros so that it's very easy to, deal with the fact that there isn't a lot of built-in reflection in C++. Objective-C, I think, is a little more small talkish and had that kind of capability. I'm not sure on that. I know there's a fellow who's been working on a Delphi version.
No Fortran yet.
No Fortran. Soon, well, yeah, we're going to get there. We work cracking on that Fortran version.
What's been your impression of the conference and the acceptance of the book here? And I certainly have one.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's touched so many sessions. I was happy after the very first day because, you know, Rick and I gave a little tutorial there and decided that we would do it, you know, pairing. And we knew we could pair on Instant Messenger. We weren't sure that we could pair in front of an audience.
Oh, this is your first time pairing in front of an audience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it feels a little like right now.
I'm assuming you dropped into the Fit Fest.
Yeah.
It seems to be quite a for those people listening out there here at the Agile 2005, it's actually a whole room dedicated to fit and fitness. People going in and they're writing a Star Trek game.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a little bit of that. People were plugging away, learning fit and getting pretty excited about it. What about the impression of the conference in general?
I think it's been a very interesting change in the conferences. There are a lot of people here. It's a lot of energy. I think it's, for me personally, it's been a very, very rewarding conference. There are a lot of people here with lots of ideas. People communicate so well in the Agile community and are so keen to get together and discuss ideas, and that you see over the space of half an hour sometimes people are sitting around the table chatting and there's all these ideas bubbling away, and you can see, well, there's a whole lot of new things coming out. And I was thinking just before that coming out of JUnit and unit testing has been an explosion of ideas. People have been exploring test-driven development, mocks, how to do this, patterns. There's a whole lot of things that are kind of driving all these ideas, and I think this is going to happen with FIT. FIT is beginning, getting out there. People are starting to think about it, and so we're thinking, well, what are the tools that can help support things? For example, I find myself, once I've got hundreds of story tests, as the system is evolving, it's really important to be able to support that change. And at the moment, we don't yet have the support for being able to make changes easily. We're used to refactoring
tools.
So a fit
refactor.
Yeah, so having
a refitter.
Right, there you go. I think we got our name. Now we got to do it.
Well, except that's not Googleable, so we'll have to find something else, but something close to
that.
Well,
we'll spell it some weird way.
Right? Yes. So that's one way. that's one area I think where there's going to be an explosion of ideas. The other one is around the whole question of how do we start thinking afresh about the collaboration between business people on the customer team and the people in the development, and how do we focus on how to support the design that the customer is carrying out at the business level. And so this is kind of bringing attention into that collaboration and looking more at the kind of bigger picture. And I think there's some very interesting things that are going to happen in that space.
There's a lot of people factors, those discussions happening at this conference. I remember 2 years ago, it was some work on retrospectives and a little bit on how do you get the story cards in line, but I mean, that area has just really taken off, I think, at this conference.
What I noticed the most is that a couple of years ago, most of the people you would talk to they were trying to get they were trying to convert to Agile and they're having a lot of trouble and they just want to know how to convert.
Right.
And I've talked to an awful lot of people who, says we've been doing it for 2 years now. And
how do we improve?
And this is what we're finding. Is this what you're finding? And, have you got any other ideas? This has been so successful for us that we want more. And that's pretty neat. And to see, of course, there are some people who are coming here to learn how to do it, and they end up talking to those people in the same sort of business instead of listening to some, guru pontificating. It's just sweet to see the community forming and supporting itself.
Yeah. There's a lot less dogma and more collaboration.
Very much so. And of course, the conference has been organized to encourage that, particularly with the open spaces, which is a kind of a on-the-fly birds of a feather sessions was very, very popular. It's just humming all the time over there.
It's interesting to see how many of the principles of agility make the community buzz. There are the issues of communicating, the issues of exploring, reflecting, looking at ways of improving things, and that applies into the community. And it's a wonderful community to be a part of. The other thing I'm seeing, it's an interesting thing that's starting to happen now, is moving into the area of what is the relationship with agility and usability?
Yeah.
And we're starting to see some people doing some really good work. Jeff Patton has been really focusing in this area, and he's raising questions around this. And this, I find this particularly interesting, to see what is the relationship between thinking about fit story tests and what they tell us about the domain, and how does that relate through into the usability issues in terms of what are the tasks, who are the people, what are the personas, how are these interrelated, how do we think about these, and can we start making them work together? And I think an interesting thing that might come out of this is, in the same way that agile approaches provide real status to testers and bring them as first-class citizens into the development environment, we may see that usability people who often feel out on the fringes, we may see them being brought in and being taken seriously and having a really important role in this development process. So that's, I see that as being very positive future.
Yeah. In fact, right before I came down, I had a panel discussion with Jeff and Lynn Miller, they were talking about some of the techniques that they use to get low fidelity usability models into the development team as rapidly as possible, and they were just very excited that there seems to now be a home for them in the Agile community, even though they've been doing it for a few years in the Agile community, that it really now there's a great opening up to there's, I think, less fear by the Agile community that will be swallowed by design, or that somehow usability will become this monster that will eat the project. And so I think we're a little more confident in our practices.
It's certainly true that the extreme programming community and the testing community have had some friction that was unnecessary, but for simply not appreciating the depth of knowledge there in the testing community, we've managed to insult them. And now that we have a little more humility, we're working hard to make sure that serious, large-scale industrial testing fits in with agile methods. And that's, I had a great experience. I have to mention pair programming with Elizabeth Hendrickson just yesterday. And it was very interesting. Of course, she could be a programmer if she wants to, but she chooses to be a tester and is very good at this exploratory style, which, you know, is to the testing community a lot like extreme programming is to the programming community. Mm-hmm. It's very much, you know, a professional, you know, thinking while they're doing it. But we tried doing, you know, testing a program together and found that the ability to identify a problem, and I was inclined to say, well, that's not a problem. But she says, well, now, Ward, really. And I said, well, let me look at the code to see how hard it is to fix before we decide if this is a problem. And we look at the code. Well, as long as I got the code open, might as well fix it and see what it looks like. And, you know, we had a very nice interaction there. But what was important is that we were looking at something that we shared in common.
Both shared the same goal of improving the product.
Right, we both had the same goal. We were both looking at the same truth, you know, what the program was. But we didn't have the same perspective. She has a very different perspective. Mm-hmm. It's very much, you know, as the guardian of the interest of the user, or the all kinds of users, for that fact. And whereas I, you know, feel strongly about what code should look like and the future flexibility of the code and so forth. And so there was tension there, but what better place to resolve it other than seconds after a problem was discovered?
Right.
And so it's a very much a fast feedback thing. And again, we hope that the fit test, because fit results are so plainly readable. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll go up on a projector just fine. They'll have a paragraph in front of a table that explains why this table is important. They'll read like a specification. Mm-hmm. But that makes an artifact that you can have a conversation around. And although I enjoyed working with Elizabeth and having this, you know, discover repair happening in seconds, there's just, you know, when the whole program has to be right and there's a lot of detail, I think that the fit tests provide that sort of opportunity for the customer, the developer, and the tester to share an artifact. Each one could add a clause, add a line, add a row to a test, say, well, you know, it's important to think about this, too, now that we're halfway through the iteration, and that it's that ownership and cooperation is really, you know, the future of development.
And I see part of that process is that by having something concrete for people to discuss, you immediately find that there are things that become clear. Mm-hmm. For example, at the tutorial, I ran a tutorial on Monday called Expressing Business Rules, and I had groups of about six people who are working on writing story tests for some stories that I provided. And some of the reactions, the feedback from the groups at the end were very interesting. For example, one of the groups said, we realize how important it is to have a customer. Mm-hmm. Another group said, it wasn't until we started trying to write the story tests, write the fit tables down, that we realized we actually didn't quite agree. We had different points of view, that by writing the story test down, we could then see that this person understood something slightly differently, and then we could deal with it. Imagine the improvement of that as compared to having developed a whole system before we realized there is a misunderstanding, yeah, and no one knew because we couldn't find out until we had a running system with a user interface. So the fit tests provide a way of providing feedback in a concrete form,
yeah,
which in time I would hope will be as valuable maybe slightly different, but it will provide the similar sort of concrete value that people, customers will have from seeing a running system. So that concreteness, I think, is a very important part of that communication process of making sure we're talking about the right thing. Yeah. What does this mean? Is this the right word? Are we really focusing on the right thing? Mm-hmm. What happens if we try this? Let's try it this way. So it's very much an exploration of ideas. And in part, there's an invention of ideas. There's right. an invention of language. And I think many developers kind of imagine that the business side have to have it all sorted out up front and then, come on, give us the requirements. We want to move on and develop the software and don't change your mind. Now, the reality is that many people in the business side as well, they're doing design. They're not sure what the best solution is. They're not necessarily altogether sure about what the problem is. What are the trade-offs? And so that communication process brings clarity on both sides. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to bring a number of skills into that set. The skills of who are the people on the customer team who understand the business organization, they understand what the issues are. The testers coming in, looking at a testing perspective, like Elizabeth, asking the questions around that testers think of, what are the boundary cases? What are the sad path cases? Having developers involved with that who are bringing in abstraction skills, who are asking the right questions around these two things kind of look similar when you see them written down on the fit table. Are there other similarities? These two things look the same, except you can apply this, you can do something to this, but not to that. Well, does it carry across? So the kind of questions that come out from the developers are things like, well, you're allowing one here. Can there be more than one? Is there a possibility that there is none in some case? So there are a lot of things that kind of get encapsulated in UML and modeling, which can turn into questions which are going directly to the customer and which the answers get turned into concrete examples which are understood by the business. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, are educating the developers with realistic examples so they have a much better feel for what is needed. Compare that to reading a requirements document which is trying to be brief and which is trying to make very general statements about what should be and which doesn't provide that ongoing communication capability.
You know, Rick, as you were explaining that, I was thinking that a lot of that was promised to us by the specification people. You know, they said if you just do a specification in a formal way, that you'll have that kind of experience.
And I'm
trying to think about what we did different that makes it work for us when it was hard for them to succeed.
Well, it's interesting that David Parnas has done a lot of work on using tabular forms for writing specifications. The step that he didn't take, as far as I know, is to make them executable. So these were examples expressed in a form that could aid the communication, but the difference is that if they're not executable and they can't be tested against the system and evolved and kept current with the system, then they become legacy, out of date, irrelevant, whereas the fit tables are maintained against the system. Mm-hmm. And so they continue to describe what it is the system is doing. They continue to describe important policy decisions, important things from the business perspective. And I suspect that many times the fit tables are starting to clarify business element issues that have never really been had any focus put on them before.
So I agree that that's a very important thing, because that means if you're going to put the effort into producing this, when you start, that there's going to be long-term value, long-term return for what you've done. I think there's also something going on, and as you mentioned, Parnas found that the tabular form somehow connected with people who were viewing specs in a way that a paragraph form didn't. And I think that's people who are responsible for all the details, you know, do find a column powerful.
Quite often when I go into testing departments, they'll have a scenario and they'll have a table of values that they need to try.
So I think the the idea that the table really is an important abstraction. I mean, it's not maybe as powerful as a class, you know, but it is it is something that how you choose what's a column and how you choose what's a row and what's in a table and how many tables is very much a statement of how you choose to think about the program, and it's a statement about how you think, but it's in within reach for a person who doesn't want to try too hard to express themselves. It has a naturalness to it, you know, that learning a specification language might not,
or a programming language.
Right.
So there's no notion of having to have curly brackets in the right place. Yeah. Almost no notion of syntax errors. So the table provides a container, and I think people are very good at, we use containers everywhere. We use space to think about things. That's an important way we reason about things, and the table really focuses on our ability, on our way of putting things in space. And we see that in user interfaces as well. We see how things are laid out in space and how things are structured together. And so people have a lot of experience with tabular forms through spreadsheets and other things, mm-hmm. so that people feel comfortable. They don't feel like they're working with a language. They feel like they're just doing the things that they do, mm-hmm. and they get out of that a lot more power than they would expect.
But in fact, they are working with a language.
That's right.
That's right. Oh, let that out. Yeah, so that is... I think one of the charms, and as you become better and better at FIT, as you've done more tables, or if you're the development team, you've supported your customer by interpreting, by writing the interpreters that make sense of these, we call them fixtures, that make mm-hmm. sense of these tables, you develop a continually growing sense of power to,
right.
you know, master what the system needs to do.
And before I wrap up, I'm going to ask one more quick question. It had occurred to me a while ago that really FIT in many ways could be a replacement on some teams for user stories. Have you seen people actually putting estimates and priority in on the screen as a comment or something, and actually replacing the user stories or backlog items in Scrum with FIT pages?
I think they're trying to do quite separate things, that the story test is there to be a basis of planning and a basis of beginning a conversation. Mm-hmm. And part of that conversation is then leading into the story tests. So I think there is, story tests won't replace stories. They are serving different purposes. The story tests help to elaborate and to be clear about the stories. And
you have the paragraph that you can put before the tables.
Oh sure.
Well, yeah. That's true. Yes.
Yeah.
But there's something that goes on before the iteration starts,
right.
where you have a stack of cards with stories written on it, and people are looking at the stories and not the tests. But they're saying, yeah, that sounds right. That sounds like that other one we did. I think that's about a two-day effort. And mm-hmm. they write two on it, and then people are stacking around the cards or yellow stickies or whatever they
right.
use.
So
the card, the story, you know, the short thing is kind of a handle that both the developers and the customers can use to talk about work right. that will happen in the future. Now, it's true that we can expect the story test to develop out of that, but that isn't actually too important for development until the iteration starts that has that test in it. And that's when you would expect that to maybe not be finished, but at least be started. And through the iteration, through all the ways you learn when you program, it could even grow to surprise even the customer of, how many cases there really are, or exceptional circumstances that maybe, you know, the test team brings to light, or whatever, that the fit material really blossoms when you get around to starting on a particular story. But stories go back, you know, it lets you get a picture of the whole project.
Right.
A very coarse resolution.
And you can't really do a story wall with
the fit. Right. But what it is it's what grows with the code.
Right.
As the iteration is progressing, and it's when you have the story tests, the tables, that you agree, yes, that is what I expected to be there. And in fact, we've run them and they're all green. So we know that in fact, that it is there.
And it's harder to tear up a wiki page.
Right. And then you feel like you finished something. Right. The sense of being complete is quite stunning.
The closure of green. We've learned it from JUnit. And we're hooked on that green.
Hooked on green. Yeah.
I'm also hooked on red to know where my focus is going to be next. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
On that note, I think we'll go green bar on this discussion. And I really want to thank you very much for dropping by.
And Bob, we thank you for your interest.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
Great. Yeah,
thank you.